on the education budget, and particularly on the major component, one of the major components of that budget, the foundation formula. Normally, that would be done strictly by subcommittee, but because of the importance of the issue to the entire state and the necessity of the committee to be informed on it, I've asked all the committee members, the entire 11-member committee, to show up there, and not just the subcommittee. At this time, I'll turn the gavel over to Representative Pappy Moss, who's the chairman of the subcommittee for the House Finance Committee on Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we'll get started right on into this hearing. We have a number of witnesses here in Juneau, and I would request, as the witnesses come up to testify, due to the teleconferencing, there is a bar on the mic here that when you're speaking, I'd appreciate it very much if you would make sure the bar is pressed so the rest of the teleconference net can get full benefit of what you have to say. And without further ado, I would ask Commissioner Lynn if he would care to start work on this thing.
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm pleased to have the opportunity to talk with you this afternoon. I want to personally thank you for taking up this very important matter early in the session. Before I begin with some of my other comments, I would like to introduce the Vice President of the State Board of Education, Mrs. Jan Holman, who has a few comments that she would like to make to your group.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you very much. My comments are very brief. I just wanted to indicate to you perhaps a little bit of the background as to how the proposal that you have before you is before you. It, for some time, the State Board has been most concerned with developing a comprehensive approach to the foundation funding issue. In our deliberations, I guess for the last year and probably more than that, we've had pieces of legislation and issues and ideas and things come before us in rather a piecemeal fashion. And as we kept getting more and more of these, it was our feeling that the state needed to take a look comprehensively at what we could do. So this was the reason for this task force and the initial statewide meeting to be put together. At our September 14th meeting in Fairbanks, we issued a directive to the commissioner to put together this statewide meeting. I know there are others here on the task force that will testify as to the procedures that were followed and the issues that they dealt with. I just wanted to give you a brief overview that this is at the State Board's direction, and if you have any questions regarding that, I'd be happy to answer them.
Before questions come up, Jan, we need to speak a little closer into the mic for the teleconference sake. Remind you of that.
Sorry.
Are there any questions by the committee here at this particular time? Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Marshall,
thank you.
Would you care to continue?
Mr. Chairman, I hope I'll remember to press the bar. I'm not accustomed to leaning on the bar at this time of day. A couple of things that I would like to say before I introduce some of the other speakers. The Foundation Support Program, as most of you know, you've been this committee for some time, is a complex series of factors that go into the funding of the public schools of this state. I want to say at the outset that we feel that because of the action we've taken over the past years, we have a very fine system of financial assistance to all of the schools. At the same time, we recognize that there is a need for some adjustment. Our overriding concern here is to bring about a greater system of equalization in the distribution of funds so that we can guarantee more adequately an equal access to good education. The task force outlines a number of things in this report that we have submitted to you. We thought before the chairman of the task force spoke specifically about some of the recommendations, it might be of value to the committee to discuss a couple of things about the foundation program as it presently exists, and also try to show to you and to explain to those that are listening a little bit about this whole concept of equalization, because it permeates the entire thread of what we, or context of what we're talking about here in the report. So with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I would like to have Mr. Hole from the Department of Education and Mr. Thompson explain some of the aspects of the existing program and get into a little bit of an explanation as to what we're talking about with equalization.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Steve and Bill.
He pulled another chair up.
Mr. Chairman, you're going to have to work it out. Oh.
I think we're going to give them a mic over the board.
You have an area mic? I mean, one that doesn't have to be pointed? You don't have a mic that would just pick him up.
For the information going on the teleconference network, we had a little difficulty in getting a mic for a board that we had going to be ready to go in just a minute here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the aspects of...
Excuse me just a moment. Will you identify yourself correctly?
Yes, sir. I'm Steve Holt from the Department of Education. One of the aspects of the foundation program that we have had some trouble explaining in the past, and people have had some difficulty in putting in perspective in terms of the entire scheme of state aid to local education, has been that of equalization. The chart on the wall in the first one in your packet is a textbook, if you will, example of equalization. The purpose of equalization is, simply put, is what its name implies, and that is to make available to a variety of municipalities with dissimilar kinds of local revenue-raising capabilities a generally equal amount of wealth. One way this is done in some states, or at least as it is advocated by some of the principals in the area of school finance, is the imposition of a uniform millage rate. Every municipality or school district is required to levy a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 mil rate, and that's an arbitrary amount. And then some limit is imposed on the top end, and that also is arbitrary. However far the governing authority wants to go in terms of aid to schools in the state is established. And no matter what the municipality generates with the millage rate, the state fills in when it falls below the amount that the state thinks is the appropriate number of dollars. So for a relatively wealthy district, such as A, the state share is relatively small. The decreasingly wealthy districts receive increasing amounts of state aid. For those very wealthy districts, for which the uniform assessment rate raises a lot of money over the maximum, that amount above the state figure is recaptured and then used to fill in for those districts that aren't so wealthy. It's really not that complicated a process. This is one approach to equalization. Are there any questions from the committee on this example?
I have one question. I think on page 16 on the booklet that you gave us, is this the explanation you're giving for what appears to me maybe a discrimination both against the lower income districts and also the high income districts? Is this the explanation for it?
No, sir. What I'm attempting to do at this point is just explain equalization as a term, as it applies to all approaches to school finance. I'll get into the approach purported in the book in a little while.
All right, thank you.
Chairman, I have a question. Do the other people on the teleconference network have this information at their sites? Or?
No, sir.
Okay, so it's probably being pretty hard for them to follow along. I just want to.
I'm sure it is.
One question on your graph. Is that something that you're proposing, or saying that's just one thing that could happen, or?
That's one way to approach equalization.
That's not the current situation.
No, sir. It's neither the current situation nor is it the one proposed in the report.
Thank you.
Certainly. Another approach, which is not totally dissimilar from the one Alaska has, is to identify an amount of flat grant entitlement to which each district will be entitled. And then that amount is forthcoming from the state, and then the districts are permitted to levy whatever tax the market will bear locally above that, so that you have a certain amount guaranteed by the state. This is usually in a unit value. In other words, so much per child, or so much per teacher unit, or so much per facility, that there are a variety of ways it can be approached. But this would be the amount guaranteed by the state. The tax would be imposed locally, and whatever that amount raises, the amount they have to work with. And that, as I said, that's pretty close to what we have in this state with respect to the city and borough district. Are there any questions on this one?
Chairman Bob.
Yes.
You say that's something close to what we have, but from looking at the graph, it looks as if that the richer the district, in other words, the more they could come up with the local revenues, the more they would have for education, cost of education in each one. But how does that relate to the in lieu of local support that we have in regards to the unorganized area of the state?
Or I'll cover that on the next chart, if that's satisfactory.
Thanks.
Mr. Scott.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, maybe for the committee's benefit, I asked the department to give us a presentation on the different forms of equalization, mainly for the purpose of acquainting you with the different options that the committee looked at before they arrived at the one they presented to you. Right. But you're aware there's more than one option for equalization. You may want to consider others than the ones being proposed by the committee itself.
Chair Mazda, then the point here is that if this were to be applied just without anything else to the state, that those districts that had no revenues available would get the state, the flat grant that the state would give them and little or nothing else, and the ones that were wealthier would get the difference. We're not trying to compare this particularly to what we have, but just as one of the options which may or may not be appropriate to the state. Thank you.
Chairman Bostic.
Mr. Chairman, this is a close approximation to the present system of equalization in Alaska. One of the long-standing criticisms of equalization as we approach it has been that it doesn't take into account enough revenue. In other words, what started out as a 10% equalization when the state paid 90% of basic needs has now deteriorated to a 3% accommodation of local revenue capabilities in equalizing state aid to school districts. So what we have is really two separate and distinct systems. For the city and borough district, you can see the tremendous range in revenue from about between 100 and 104% of basic need, or the foundation entitlement, to the petrochemical cities and boroughs, which can raise right at 200% of the state entitlement. The effect of this system, when taken in conjunction with the REAA, is that we have one classification of school district which has roughly 112% of foundation entitlement with which to operate the district. We have another series of city and borough districts which are, in essence, capped at around 100%, and they can't go any higher if they don't have the local revenue, and they don't have any other sources of revenue to tap. And you have the other districts which have they have unlimited capability, but the voters are willing to pay a lot, even though they don't have the petrochemical wealth. For whatever reason, the voters are willing to throw in more from local sources. So you've created a pattern then of the haves, the medium haves, and those which really have not.
Chairman? Yeah, this Russ Meekins again. Well, I don't understand which ones you're saying are would be the say the Bush schools in that case, the one that the ones that have the least to spend.
The REAAs. No, that's not what I'm saying, Mr. Chairman. We have two separate systems. For the REAAs, the state pays 100% of foundation. And I'd like to make a distinction here between foundation and in lieu of local taxing. Foundation is the amount generated by the ADM of the district, the number of students applied to the schedule. The in lieu of local tax is an amount, which I'm sure you know, is equal to the average amount per pupil appropriated from local tax sources in the cities and boroughs. Here is the 100% level for the foundation entitlement. The in lieu of amounts to about 12% foundation. So it, even though this will vary a little bit from district to district, on the average, it provides about 112% of basic need or foundation entitlement.
So the one that's worst off then would not be the REAAs, but the school district that that either because they can't or the voters don't allow it, contribute at least that 12% to the above the foundation fund. Is that right?
Yes, sir. You'll notice that there are obviously several different sources of revenue here. For the REAAs, Public Law 81874 payments are received in about these amounts. And these are representations of actual school district revenue pictures. One REAA, for instance, receives about 50% of foundation in 874 money. And as you know, we presently deduct the 874 entitlements from the foundation support. If that were not done, then above 112%, you could go another 50%, and that would be the amount of revenue that each of these REAAs would receive. So that while for the REAAs, 874 constitutes a significant proportion of local revenue entitlements, for cities and boroughs, for the most part, it's far less than that. These run 2.2, 1, 4, 1.7, 1.1, 4, and 17% of their total foundation. So 874 revenues for that purpose, for that reason, are not taken into account in determining the foundation entitlements of cities and boroughs. For the cities and boroughs with very little taxing authority, the system tends to freeze them within plus or minus 5% of foundation entitlement. Some cities and boroughs can't even come up with a required local effort. And they have to work it out with their municipalities to get some in-kind support. And they have very little flexibility. For others, there is a great deal more flexibility. But that's basically the way the Alaska Equalization Program works. And I would emphasize that the equalization takes place over 3% of foundation.
Do all REAAs have access to 874 money?
Yes, sir. They all have access to 874, but it varies terrifically. For instance, one REAA receives around 7 or 8% of basic need or foundation entitlement in 874, whereas others receive between 50 down to, it averages around 25 to 30% of foundation.
Thank you. Any questions?
Chairman, under this bill, the effect of equalization would be greatly expanded. And we would cease to have, in a de facto sense, two separate classifications of school districts. All school districts would receive 100% of foundation entitlement. It would eliminate the 3% equalization characteristic. In addition to that, the statewide average of a revenue per pupil would be determined, and we have at this point come up with $1,055 per student, and that's predicated upon adding all of the assessed real and true value of personal property to the total amount of 874 payments in the prior fiscal year and dividing by the number of kids in the state, multiplying that figure by 5 mils. The important number at this point is the 5 mils. That's an arbitrary assessment rate. It could be anything you like, for that matter. But once you've established that, then you've established a uniform amount to which every district ought to have access. To qualify for that, the cities and boroughs would have to generate at the local level an amount equal to 5 mils as an assessment on their local property valuation. Now, I want to emphasize that it's an equivalent. They don't have to tax. They can use a variety of sources to come up with the local money, among which are 874 payments, local tuition from the state, or a local tax. Having reached that level, regardless of what it generates, if it's below the statewide average, the state would fill in to bring them up to the statewide average. If it exceeds the statewide average, there is no penalty imposed. For the REAAs, the state would continue to give them 100% of the foundation entitlement, in addition to that, the amount of supplemental aid equal to every other school district.
Mr. Chair?
Correct me.
Thank you. Steve, could you repeat, I think you gave a verbal description of the formula. I wonder if you could repeat it so that I could write it down. You were on quantum mechanics, and I was still back on relativity theory.
It might be helpful if I went through it graphically, if that would be of assistance to you.
Well, I'd like you to do that too, but just repeat it for me.
Sure.
I'll just add it there.
The first thing we do is go to the January 1, 1978 report of the state tax assessor for organized cities and boroughs, which we use for determining the equalized percentage and foundation support. And that lists by municipality, in this case, those boundaries are concurrent with district boundaries, the assessed valuation of real and personal property in the district. You'll find the total in the 78 report is about $17 billion. You add to that the amount of 874 paid to all city and borough and REAA school districts for that year, which is roughly $26 million. You divide that number by the total number of ADM in the state, which is roughly 85,000, and you multiply that number by 5 mils, and you get a number which should approximate $1,055. The $1,055 represents an arbitrary average statewide to which every district ought to have access on a per pupil basis for the support of education under this proposal. And that would be the benchmark against which district entitlements would be computed. Now, to figure a district entitlement, you would take that 1,055.
Well, let me break in there. What you're saying is the 1,055 is an arbitrary figure based on this formula per pupil that every district or REAA ought to have at per pupil, disregarding the source of the fund. They ought to have that, whether it's a combination of 874 and in lieu or whatever, but that's what they ought to have. You haven't spoken to that yet, but you're talking about the total of all sources of funding ought to be 1,055.
Yes and no, Mr. Chairman. That's the starting point. But that's the benchmark in terms of the statewide average against which all the entitlements are computed.
All right.
Yes, sir. To figure a district's entitlement, you would multiply the $1,055 by the area differential of a district.
Right.
Then you would assess or determine what a 5 mil tax would be on the local district, divide by the ADM of that district.
May I break in at this time?
Certainly.
Where are you going to come up with that 5 mil tax deal out in the urban areas? Never had any tax digest in the first place.
They don't have to impose a tax. It's an arbitrary way to figure what the local ability to generate money is. If they have any 874 money, they can count that as their required local effort. If they have state tuition payments, they can count that. If they do not, then as a last resort, they're going to have to consider local sources of tax revenue.
Well, that's where I have a little difficulty with it. If they have no local source of tax revenue out in these bush areas, then how are they going to do it? That's where I have a problem with.
Are you talking about the REAAs?
That's what I'm talking about.
For the REAAs, the state pays the whole, there is no local required effort.
Okay, that answers
Mr. Scott?
In reference to Mr. Meekin's question about whether what we're suggesting is that every district should have $1,055 per student or per ADM, I want to remind the committee that this equalization process is in addition to the basic need formula. So it's not $1,055 per student.
for the whole state support. This is in addition to the basic need form of the regular foundation program.
Thank you.
$1,055, or whatever that figure is, ultimately, is this portion of state aid. Mm-hmm. This is 100% state, and it deals only with foundation entitlement.
Would this $1,055 then be part of that $80 million that looks like this thing's asking for?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank
you. If that's the case, then we take... I'm wondering if it's related to what historically the districts have been contributing at all. I see your formula here, and I'm having trouble quickly understanding whether or not it's completely arbitrary in the sense that it's not based upon the historical contributions of the tax districts, or whether it's just something that you think is a good number that ought to be.
As a practical matter, Mr. Chairman, there are only two or three organized city and borough school districts which do not come close to this, either through tax 874 or tuition payments. It does have a base, a historical basis, in fact.
If that's the case, then the difference would be that the state would be shouldering some of that that is normally shouldered by a local. Is that, am I right in assuming that? If this, having heard before this meeting the price tag on some of these things, I was thinking it either has to be an increase or it has to be a change in the funding source, one of two. So
it can happen. The effect can be one of two. If the district is imposing a substantial tax burden upon the local taxpayers, then that district could use the additional state aid to relieve that tax burden. If the district has no taxable wealth to speak of, then it wouldn't make any difference if they tax 10 mils. They're still not going to get much. And in that case, this would be an additional amount of state aid to bring them up to a level which is enjoyed by several other school districts.
Any other questions? At this moment, is there any questions on the telecom net out there on as far as the explanation that you've been listening to here without the benefit of the grants?
Maybe you want to pull them by a specific place. They've all turned over to their state.
They've all turned over.
Chairman, I have a question.
Yeah.
Steve, in looking at some of your examples here, you had one, school district number one, on page 17 of this booklet you provided. It said that a large borough school district in which the required local effort generates $770 per ADM. If you take the 1,055 figure that you mentioned, subtract the local effort per ADM, which was the $770, up with a state equalization for ADM of $285. Does that mean that, I guess I need to know what you mean by required local effort, because it seemed to me that it would give it a real incentive for the local people to reduce their effort because it would be compensated by state effort.
If you prefer, Mr. Chairman, I'll be glad to go through. I'll answer whatever you like. I'll proceed through the formula computation to give you an idea of how it works, and then it will probably be more appropriate for the chairman of the task force to come up and explain how that applies to the entire scheme.
That'd be fine.
Compute the entitlement for any district under this plan. The first thing that would have to be accommodated is the benchmark or the statewide average. And briefly, again, to do that, you take the total valuation, which is roughly $17 billion.
to add to that 874 payments, which for fiscal 78 were approximately $26 million. And that's a total of 17, 26. Then divide that number by the statewide ADM, which is roughly 85,000. And that gives you a number. Then you multiply that by 5 mills. The bottom line number is $1,055.
Where'd you get Where'd you get the 5 mills from?
The 5 mills is the amount determined by the task force to be most appropriate for the computation of this formula. It's an arbitrary number, which is, again, is fairly closely tied to the historical perspective of how much the cities and boroughs have been assessing.
Steve, for the benefit of the teleconference, will you go through that explanation again, please?
Yes, sir. To determine the statewide per pupil value against which you compute subsequent per pupil entitlements at the district level, you have the total assessed valuation of the state, and the report used for the purposes of this recommendation was the January 1, 1978 report, which lists the total amount of real and personal property value of approximately $17 billion. You add to that the total 874 entitlements for that same fiscal year, which in this case is roughly $26 million, which gives you a total of $17,026,000,000. You divide that by the total number of students and average daily membership in the state, which is approximately 85,000. Then you multiply that number by 5 mils, which is $1,055. Now, for informational purposes, obviously, even though this is arbitrary, each mil is worth approximately $211. So you can see the effect of varying that number to whatever extent you want for purposes of information. This number then becomes the source of all later computation. Now, for a district,
Before you leave that sheet, would you give me an explanation? I'm having a little problem here.
Certainly.
$17 billion. How did you come by that figure? Is that what the rules show, the assessed valuation is? Does that show what is actually being on the assessment rolls that somebody is taxing? I'll tell you why I asked the question. Maybe it needs a few to explain. Watching you go through your graphs, I see you have the REAs. They were getting 112%. And now I see on the last one that I remember looking at, you had them up to 135%. They haven't, all they were doing was sitting waiting for to take their cut out of the extra $82 million. What I want to know is in the $17 billion, we have a lot of areas in the state where the, in my estimation, the taxing is completely wrong. We have certain areas who have properties that they assess and tax, and you have others that don't assess and don't tax. Is the $17 billion what being taxed, or is that what is being taxed? And if that's the figure that is available for taxation, but part of it's not being taxed, I want to know how much of it is being taxed.
It might be helpful to explain the difference between in lieu of local tax and the 5 mils first, and then I'll get. Or is that necessary?
The in lieu of local tax is still state money, is it not?
Yes, sir.
When we start talking about equalization, I want to know if we're actually talking about equalization, or if we're just putting $82 million in it and maybe equalizing a little those that are getting some that they shouldn't get a little more and some of that's less. And that's the part that I want explained to me. I want to know where the people who could and should be paying taxes right now into the school are not paying taxes. That's my point.
Yes, sir.
You understand what I'm
Yes, sir. What
I'm getting? Okay.
You can compute that very simply by taking a look at
a 5 mil levy statewide as a required local effort and see how many districts are below it. And as a practical matter, there are several who are not taxing at 5 mil. I might also point out that there's one that isn't, that if it did, would raise an amount almost $200,000 per child. That's North Slope, and it's only taxing at 2 mil. Anchorage is taxing right at 5 mil, plus or minus a few very minor percentage points. Many districts are taxing right at 5 mil, many don't.
Do the REAs tax?
The REAs have no taxing authority. All of their money is either of
another word or source. In other words, in those areas being served by the REAs, nobody's collecting any taxes, regardless of whether or not there's property there that could should be taxed. That's what I'm getting at all the way around.
That's my understanding of Title 29, isn't it? And to answer your earlier question, $17 billion is not wealth that is taxed or should be taxed. That is the total assessed valuation of real and personal property in the state that is taxable. In other words, all of the real and personal property that exists outside of the unorganized borough.
Thank you.
Would it be of any help to compute the entitlement for a district that...
you mean compute the entitlement for a district that does not have property tax?
Either. Whatever you'd like to hit next. If you've had enough of this technical garbage, then I'll turn the thing over to the chairman of the task force, and he can proceed with specific task force recommendations.
That, I think, is a timely thing. Mr. Scott, do you have a question?
Maybe it'd be more appropriate to ask the chairman of the task force, Mr. Chairman, but could we ask for some discussion on the reason why the committee chose not to establish a maximum rate per child and recapture, in addition, that we had shown to us in the first example of what could be done in equalization. In this case, they did not do that.
Mr. Chairman, yes, there is a lid, if you will, imposed upon the regional education attendance areas. In other words, the combination of 874 receipts and state aid above foundation cannot exceed what they would get under this schedule if they were a city or borough district. When the combination does exceed, it is deducted by the state from foundation entitlement. There is no maximum imposed upon city and borough districts under these recommendations.
Thank you, Steve. Is there any questions out on the net out there? I might just make a round on it as far as we've proceeded so far before Ms. McKinnon steps up. Bethel, do you have any questions out there on the subject that we discussed so far?
No questions, thank you.
How about Kodiak?
No questions at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Keenan?
No questions at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Ketchikan?
No questions.
Sitka?
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Fairbanks. Maxine, you still there?
Fairbanks.
Have I missed anybody on the net?
This is Dylan, General. We're back on the telecom concern right now.
Do we have anybody in Anchorage that has any questions on testimony we've had so far?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Commissioner Lynn, would you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to just say one or two things. One for Mr. Freeman on the matter of the of taxation in the unorganized borough. As you probably recall on the chart that was shown, because of the nature of the property in most of the unorganized borough, their tax contribution in essence is a federal receipt because of the nature of the land, and it's a fairly substantial amount that goes to offset the cost of education. One of the difficulties that the committee has had with the whole proposal is to try to work that into some kind of a equalized approach. Quite frankly, as we've looked at the funding in the state over the past 8 or 10 years, that has been one of the most difficult things to take into account. How do you equate that with, you know, local property tax? It is a form of taxation or a receipt from taxation. I would like to say also, before Mr. McKinnon comes out, that the committee's report has been, in our view, one of the best reports that we have had. We do a lot of reports. We get a lot of criticism from different people around the state. We feel that the committee, because of the makeup of the membership and the work that they did looking at many of the aspects, has consequently resulted in nothing but very good reaction from people around the state, at least as far as the concepts related to all of the different components. We appreciate the work that the committee has done, and I think you'll find their presentation and report very useful. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce Mr. McKinnon, who has served as the chairman of the committee, and he is also the superintendent of the Juneau School District.
Mr. McKinnon, would you... Don't get the black bar, Don.
Another bar.
Another bar, you know.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I thank you for taking this time to at least review what we've tried to do here, and trying to help not only the department but all the school districts address some of their serious concerns about the education program in the state. I would like, in the offset, to point out that some of the other task force members are here. And the task force was a pretty broad group of people. There were 5 people originally appointed to the task force, and then out of about 150 people at the first meeting, there were 5 more people that were elected to, actually turned out to be 6 more people elected to serve as chairman or spokespersons of subcommittees. And from that, I was elected to be chairman of the total group. And we have met for about 4 months on a steady monthly basis, and a couple of times, one time at least twice in 1 month, to wrestle with this problem. And some of the crew that are here are behind me, Ron Wesley from Northwest Arctic, Bob Van Slyke's here from Southwest School District, and Joe Cooper's here from the Yukon-Koyukuk School District, and Gus Sadra's here from the Fairbanks School District, and I don't think I missed any of the rest of the crew. Plus, we had the input of a lot of people during the whole process while it was going on. Executive secretaries from the various educational groups were there, and met with some of your cohorts who went down the line working with this task. The biggest concern we had was the task of equalization, which, as was explained to us, was to try to fairly distribute dollars so every child had equal access to a basic educational dollar. And in doing that, we determined that minus doing the cost of business in remote areas, you could discount that, and you could discount categorical aid, but we had to talk about the basic money at that point, that each child should have basically an equal access. We should be spending equal dollars on each child once you took the area differential out of there, which is the cost of doing business. Once we resolved that we were going to take care of that with the area differential, that was the intent, then it was a little easier to look at the basic dollar problems. And so consequently, after wrestling through a bunch of the proposals, some of them even like some of the ones that Steve put up there, and we did come up with the current proposal that you see in the recommendation, taking all of the money that's been assessed by Community and Regional Affairs across the state to use it as that's the taxable money that we know about. It has nothing to do with the Bush community, the rural REA, because that area hasn't been out there and been identified, at least as far as tax rolls are concerned. And then on top of that, because that was not identifiable out there, we took the 874 money, which they do get, and put that in things that would really meet the needs of things, and of course looked at the concerns of every school district in the state. And we had the input of it. We had on the committee, we had superintendents from big, or people from big school districts, small school districts, REAs, and of course all the testimony that was coming in. And so our equalization formula came about after looking at a variety, and we did look at the potential of trying to recapture money from some of the school districts like Valdez or the North Slope and some of those places, and that presented some real problems because what in effect would be doing is be giving them no state money in some cases. And that we felt that that was probably a difficult one to sell. So our recommendation boiled down to the fact that with this statewide average, we were addressing the concerns, and particularly for cities and boroughs that were really working hard to raise taxes to meet their needs, or they didn't have the capabilities of meeting their needs. We did come up with a formula that would try to provide money, take a banana if you want to, and provide money that would give their children as equal an access to money as the school districts are side to side with the REA. There's two REAs right by Nenana. The Anchorages, the Junos, the Ketchikans that are already taxing at a sizable amount, yet still not able to meet the educational needs, and then all they keep going back to their taxpayers and look for that extra money from them. And looking to the state, of course, to help us make up the difference. And so consequently, that brings us to the charts that one of you members was looking at, the first one being the school district number one, which was in the equalization formula, which, by the way, is fairly comparable to what Anchorage is. We didn't actually pick Anchorage, but as the samples worked out, it seemed to work somewhat close. And I don't know, Steve, would you unpin that thing a little bit so we can look at that? You, the people in the committee, have it right here on page 17 in the recommendation. But for those that don't have it, there is a chart up there that would show you how we envision the 5 mil, that would work for a district. This just has to be a large school district.
I think Mr. Scott has it. If I may interject here, a question first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question has been raised, Mr. McKinnon. If we understand the presentation that Steve made earlier, the end result of the equalization process is to try and get an average to all the districts of 135% of the current basic need formula. Can you review the reasons why it wouldn't be just as easy for the state to just increase the foundation unit 35% and accomplish the same goal without going through the equalization process?
Well, as soon as you raise the foundation formula 35%, multiply it times area differential, you just equalize with them again, because that just increases. I think that's part of the task that we were faced with, just boosting that up, but that didn't necessarily accomplish it. I don't know if that's what you're driving at.
Mr. Chairman, I think maybe the question is, again, for the committee's understanding, is what is the necessity to equalize? Why don't we just get more state aid?
Well, the basic necessity to equalize is based on what we see going on in states across the nation, where you've actually got court cases that are forcing states by court order to equalize their money and wealth. And there's been in California and a whole variety of them, and it's been mandated by the case, by the courts, and in order to anticipate and probably come out with a better process, we're looking at the equalization, because what we're getting is Anchorage kids getting less money per child spent on them compared to some other places in the state, once you throw area differential and those kinds of things out. That was trying to be one step ahead of some districts saying, hey, our kids are not having access to the educational dollars that they ought to be and stay out of court.
Okay. All right, Brian.
Now, you're saying that we start out by everybody getting an equal thing under cost per ADM, then we adjust for regional cost differences, and because we've adjusted for regional cost differences, it's not fair to the students whose districts have lower costs. I'm obviously not catching it right somewhere there.
No, we're saying if you've taken care of the base money, if you subtract the cost differential and you take care of, you're talking about just the base money, if each child, and the money divided in there is equitable at that point. But if you just go to the beginning and take and multiply your unit value by 35%, you won't in fact equalize if this equalizes because you haven't addressed the concerns of the base value to begin with, it's because that it spreads it out unequally. 35. In order to get equalization, it may not take 35% money in the North Slope, where it might take 35% more money in Anchorage. But if you just do 35% across the state, you continue to keep this equalization situation going.
Mr. Chair,
I have a bit of a problem here, and maybe it's because I'm cynical and skeptical and all those sort of things, but
yeah.
I don't quarrel, and I don't, to be real frankly, I don't really understand all the problems, but I think I'll figure it out some later. Let me tell you what makes me a little skeptical. If the organization came in with a report, a recommendation, making an argument for equalization, and the cost was $1.5 million, I would be a lot more susceptible and have a lot more confidence in it than I do one, an argument that's made for equalization that costs $82 million. And it seems reasonable to me to assume that there may be some districts that get more money than they should, that are under the present situation are getting more than they should. And if the argument was that some are getting more than they should and some are getting it less, so we'll work this out and we'll take some away from those that are getting too much and give it to those that are not getting enough, that I could understand. That part makes sense to me. But when such a plan comes forth that has an $82 million price tag, I get the feeling that it's just possible, and again, maybe that's just because I have a suspicious mind, that I have a feeling that equalization is being used in an excuse to come up for another $82 million. And I hope my concerns are understandable to you, but that they're at least they're honest. Thank you.
I understand your concerns, and I really feel that the committee that worked on this and wrestled with it was not looking at how to get $82 million more in school districts. They were looking at the concern and where there was inequities in the formulas. True, we didn't talk about cutting school district money, but we looked at it over the long haul, and I think if you look at it, not every district got the equal amount of money, but in the equalization, obviously, we're trying to help those districts that have the greatest need as we proceed.
Mr. Scott,
if I may correct one statement, Mr. Chairman, this may help Representative Freeman, but it won't eliminate the concern. The proposal from the committee is for a 2 or 3 or 4 part package, which totals $82 million. The equalization portion of their presentation is a $30 million package. I've held up, I have some backup information which I'll now pass out to you. I was waiting for Mr. McKinnon's presentation to do that. The equalization by itself that we're now addressing is about a $30 million package.
Thank you.
Mr. McKinnon, I think now is the time for you to ask my question. I think it's in order right at the moment. I'm reading on page VI here. It says the reader should be mindful that selective acceptance of these recommendations or alterations in any of these recommendations may very well result in an unequalized opportunity for a sound educational program. Do I construe that to mean we got to put the whole $82 million out or what? This whole program's going to fail or what?
I think the committee's recommendation is that we have a process or a concept in that package, and that in order to get true equalization, the process needs to be adopted. We're not trying to say, give us $82 million or you got nothing, but we are saying that process in its entirety is needed to get the total equalization and also address some other critical areas as we go through those charts that I'll point out. But that's the idea behind the committee's recommendation to the State Board, is that it is a process that, through Mr. Scott said, the first two are called equalization. We also point out in a couple of the other charts where there's some areas that are not equalized, and we make some recommendations there. So before you've got the total thing, if you only took two columns of it and implemented that, and that's all you're implementing, I guess what we're saying is that you still would have this equalization.
Well, the conception I had of this thing here is that all the rhetoric in the world, apparently, it's not going to do any good as far as this report is concerned, unless you got the 82 million. Maybe you got some way we can do it without the 82 million.
I'm not going to proceed to say that we can do it without the 82 million or anything else. That was what the cost, after we looked at the whole thing, that's what the cost tag came out. We looked at what needed to be done to address the problems. Then the total was added on top of it. We weren't looking, like I say, we were not looking for a way to spend $82 million. We looked at the needs of some of the school districts across the state.
I guess the point I'm trying to get is that, is it necessary in order to implement this program or this policy that you've come up with, is it going to be required sooner or later? Are we going to cough up $82 million? That's what I'm trying to get at.
I guess the answer to that is eventually, sometime, yes. That would probably be the answer to it if you're going to implement it as perceived by the tax board.
You guys back again. Representative Meekin.
Yeah, could you tell me what I'm seeing on the, I guess it's on page 17 of the book, is the same as you have on the chart there. I'm trying to make some sense out of it. You have a line here called required local effort. And I wonder what that is. What it's obviously not just the amount that whatever amount they happen to raise. There's some formula obviously that determines what each district would be required under this concept to come up with, because there's a somewhat of a penalty if they don't come up with what they're required to. How where's the formula for that? I can't find it here. I'm wondering.
Basically, the formula for that was to go to the Community Regional Affairs, assessed evaluation for that city borough, multiply it times 5 mils, and see what that would raise. Now, if it raised $1,055, then they would get no state help. But in this case, it raised $770 on this first one, and so that would be their required if they want to participate in equalization to raise. If they raise that, then they would get $285 per child above the 770 from the state. The state effort would be the $285. If they raise anything less than that, that would be deducted from their state participation. It would be a penalty.
But the penalty is a dollar for dollar reduction. It puts them in the same, puts the local governments in the same situation they are now. They add a dollar to the school effort. That's $1 that's added. And if they fail to do that, then they lose a dollar, right? They don't. There's no penalty in terms of the state. Is it double in that respect? If they came up with how does that work, Mac? It's double, isn't it? Because they came up with say $50 less than their portion, and the state then reduces their portion by 50%. So whatever they fail to put in, it costs them twice, then, doesn't it? So it is more than a dollar for dollar reduction.
It would be that way. If it was a local determination that they didn't want to raise that much money, that they would be aware that on the equalization only we're talking about, not on the basic grant, that they would be having a double penalty. What the local didn't raise plus what the state wouldn't give them, that's true.
Right.
Okay.
Mr.
Rod. And you're saying that it's court action outside is what requires the assessment of a required local effort?
No, it doesn't require an assessment. It requires that by court action, there's been court determinations that the state has a responsibility to provide education for children. And if one district is extremely wealthy and another one's extremely poor, that's not an excuse for not providing adequate funding to that poor district. And so the state is required to equalize the funding for the poor district. What those students would have is an equal access to the funds within a given parameter, but basically that's a concept.
So we couldn't just not require our local effort and give everybody that $1,055. We'd be prohibited from doing that by the court, is that what you're saying? And require no local effort.
Yeah, you could do that, but what we're saying is that the local areas have some ability to tax, and it was an opinion of the committee that if you had that ability to tax, some effort in the local ought to be in there.
And that, even though we're treating those school districts differently from the REAA, that's not illegal?
No, because the REAA's
have equal access to that basic local statewide average of $1,055. So that we're making sure that they get that too. See, we've so everybody has the same access to it across every child across the state on that local average.
Well, I agree that every child ought to have it. I just don't see why we have to charge some districts because they have taxing authority and not charge other districts for part of that.
Well,
that's essentially a political decision. Is what you're saying?
It would be a political decision if you decided to handle it another way in the legislature. Yes. We're saying that some of them have the ability to do it and do it without any strain or not, you know, without a great deal of effort, where others have quite a bit of effort to do that. They would put a tremendous burden. I can use my own district, for example. We'd have to double our tax effort right now, practically, to get up to 1,055.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions on this. Might have taken then that if you say take a rich borough like the North Slope borough of Valdez, Kenai, rich in terms of assessed valuation, they would probably 5 mills, they would generate more than 1,055, right? Very easily. So that the state equalization for those areas would be nothing, and they would contribute that 1,055. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now another problem that I can see is that. I think Representative Freeman alluded to this, but it's just finally sunk in to me. Isn't it true that in some areas of the state there's property out there? There may be lots of equipment, say in a logging camp or in a mineral camp somewhere, and yet it doesn't show up on the rolls as assessed valuation.
Okay. That's correct too.
Well, if that's the case, then I think that the theory you're working on is to take into consideration the ability of local effort and to how much they're working up, they're contributing according to their ability. But in some cases, this formula would miss it. If there was a district where millions and millions of dollars worth of taxable property was not listed and was not counted on this, then the state would be contributing money on this equalization to an area that really wasn't doing its share relative to another area, like, for instance, Anchorage municipality, where I'm sure all the property that's there is accounted for on the tax roll.
You're not crossing anything that we didn't talk about. That's true. We don't have any way that we know how you can get at that until either they're organized in an incorporated area or there's some legislation that would identify that, because there's no way at the present time that anybody has identified that property out there. So we didn't have something to work with. We would certainly include that. It would have been included in the formula, I'm sure. If that was, and I think that gets back to the issue of whether you're going to have mandatory government out there or whatever. But at this present time, it's not there. And the best that we could use for something, so there'd be some contribution, was to use our 874 money as a contribution in there. We realize it doesn't come anywhere as close to matching using the property tax thing, but we don't have any more of a handle than you do at the present time, because there's no way the community and regional affairs can't. We have nothing to pick out of. There, we've just been making a guess of what's up there. We don't have that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, can I continue?
Go ahead.
Thank you. So that's a problem that you've isolated before, but it's not taken care of. Okay. Another question: is it possible the 1,055 is not actually the limit, right? With the regional differential, or whatever you call it, is that what you call it? The regional differential, area differential. It is possible to get more than 1,055. For instance, I see here on this worksheet that Matt Sue would get 1440. It says increased equalization in thousands. So that's what they would get per ADM, 1,440. Is that correct? Am I reading that wrong?
Is
that
a million or 4 million?
Okay. That's a total, right?
Yeah.
That's higher because they have more students than not because. Okay. Where's the correct column in there? Do you have that anywhere?
I'm sorry, I'm not with the same sheet that you're.
That's not a per ADM sheet, Mr. Chairman. That's the actual total dollar fund.
Dave, is there an ADM sheet here somewhere?
No, we do not have an ADM sheet.
You'd have to take to get the ADM figure for Matt Sue, and I don't know what their area differential is, but you just multiply the area differential times that. If it was 1.05, you just take 1.05 times it, and that tell you what your ADM was for that one.
Okay.
The base is one, of course, that's Anchorage, Juneau, Ketchikan. Those three districts are at the base. And
well, but what I need to know is how many students they have. How many, what's their average daily exemption? We don't have that.
You don't have that chart. We can compare that, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, well, Dave, I would like that information because in terms of trying to, we can look at the formula all day long, but we want to look at the results to find out if in the theory, if it really works out that it looks to us just eyeballing it, that there's some fairness there. And if I can't these are comparing apples to oranges because Nenana has fewer students than North Slope, and so unless I get it down to the average daily membership, I can't really make a good comparison.
We will get a chart, Mr. Chairman, that presents the information that you're asking for. Can I make one point also, Mr. Chairman? You asked the question, is 1,055 the limit except for area differential? I'll point out again that it is not, because again, the local borough can raise an additional 5 mils if they want to on top of that 1,055, so that there is no practical limit, so to speak.
Mr. Chairman, one further question. One of the things that the state has done for boroughs in this state is the, and some have gotten more from it than others, is the Municipal Land Selection Act. Which I don't know if you're familiar with, but for instance, in the case of the Mat-Su Borough, they got 355,000 acres, and that's worth about at least $1,000 an acre. So we're talking about $355 million of land that they received. Kenai's got a similar situation. Fairbanks did pretty good. I think they got 155. Anchorage got 20,000. Ketchikan and Juneau and Southeast didn't make out at all under that bill. I'm just wondering if that is part of the evaluation. In other words, is the land that the borough owns considered in this assessed evaluation?
No, it's not. It's taxable property is what you've got in there. That Community Regional Affairs has identified as taxable real property.
Well, that would be I would have a real problem because one of the reasons that was supported was that we were trying to encourage boroughs to formulate, and then the question was, well, if they do form, how are they going to pay for the cost of government? So we said, well, the state will give them money, but the state didn't have any money in 64 when this bill was passed, and so we said, well, we've got lots of land, let's give them land, and they can sell the land or lease the land, and they can use that income to defray the cost of local government. So that's the reason that the bill was passed. Unfortunately, the formula was based upon the size and not the population of the boroughs. So consequently, those large boroughs that had a lot of certain kind of land got a tremendous amount of it. Mat-Su got the most. So they've got literally $500 million worth of land that the original intent was to pay for these kinds of things. And if it's not considered in the formula, I just don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm making a problem that doesn't exist. But it just appears to me that that might be unfair. I don't know what the other members.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Montgomery.
One question. On page one, the REA and borough schools represents $58 million or so. The rural schools are roughly $20 million increase if you took the total package. If you divide that by rough people teach the students in the districts, it would mean an increase for the borough city students of about $800 plus, and on the rural students of about $1,800 plus. So I guess my question to you would be, does it take that proportion, 800 plus for the city borough students and 1,800 for the rural, an increase of that, to make our entire state system equitable?
I guess I didn't go through it from that standpoint. I realized that working the formula out that you have more students in the populated areas we're talking about. We were trying to address and get it closer to being equitable. I think that what you have for a lot of those REAs is you've got a higher area differential that's affecting those dollars, but they're also skewing it up in their favor at this present time, too. You've got the highest REA, highest area differential is 155% affect a large proportion of those students there and a small proportion of cities and boroughs by comparison.
Mr. Chairman, I recognize the difference in the two schools, and I want an education for all of our Alaska students, whatever the cost may be. And I strongly support that and will endeavor to achieve it wherever the boy or the girl may live. However, my question and my concern, I guess, is the fact if we bought this document in total and we bought the $82.3 million, the increase would be for the city borough boys and girls $800+. There's about 70,000 plus students for the 59 million increase. For the 11,000 plus rural students, there's 20 million. And in rough figures, again, that's $1,800. So the question again would be, are we that far off now that in order to make them equitable, must we spend $1,800 average for the rural and $8 for the city to have our students equitable? If it's so, we've got a bad program this year.
I guess, Representative Montgomery, I would refer to the task force on page 18 where we talk about the area differential study to really deal with the area differential. We have some concerns about the area differential and how those figures were picked up, and they may or may not be proper. And so we have suggested that a new study be conducted in order to address those area differentials. In fact, they may be, if they are out of line, by using the study, could affect the change on with that, and then it would be done in a reasonable, equitable manner. So we're trying to identify the true cost of doing business in a remote site. I don't think that that's, you know, it's been fairly political up to this point. And so we're saying that if you did constitute and had told the department to get that study done, that you would look at the cost that should have some merits to doing business out there, such as transportation, freight, and utilities, and see if, in fact, there's a need for where the area differential ought to be and correct it with that. I'm saying that the base value from those areas should be exactly the same, and that the area differential is what's creating that difference that you're talking about more than the base value, unless for some reason they are getting some additional help in an area like bilingual or special ed or something like that where there wasn't a weakness detected.
Aren't you saying, in a sense, the difference in this fund, the differential funding, aren't you saying that it cost us more for the same quality education in the bush versus the quality of education in the urban areas? Isn't that what you're saying, the major reason for the increased funding for the rural students?
That should be we're saying that should be the basic difference, yes. And we're also saying that we would like to see a handle gotten on the area differential so they, in fact, address that need in some kind of a reasonable and proper manner, and we're recommending this type of a study. We think that sometimes those numbers were picked at random or we don't know where, for example, how we got certain numbers. They may be right, or they may be way off. We suspect in some cases they may be too high, in some cases they may be low, but that something has to be, there has to be a fixed way of doing that that's matched into a formula, and that's what our recommendation is, that you establish the cost differential that way. And that ought to be the only thing that makes the difference, the cost of, per child costs out there, the basic thing, except a little bit of front-end money for the high cost of operating a little tiny school.
Then you have, did you consider historical data over the past years that education expenditures to end this study that you made, so you come with these figures?
Tell you the truth, there isn't a great deal of historical data to look at that. That's why we recommend the study be done in the area differentials. You notice we did not recommend change in area differentials at this stage. We didn't come in and say that Juneau's area differential ought to go up 10%. We said don't do anything with the area differentials, do a study, and then if in fact they're real or not real, once you have that study, there's something to go on. But the past studies we feel were not done well, and that things that really ought to be looked at instead of market basket figures in about four or five cities would be transportation, freight, and utilities, and inter-district costs.
You care to carry on with your charts?
Well, the charts, I think you all have them, and I think people out there in the teleconferencing do have access to the charts if there are questions, but I just used the Anchorage one there, but it works for the REAs. Obviously, they don't have a penalty clause in there because they don't have the ability to raise any taxes. There's no legal structure for us to even talk about raising taxes. This study, until something's created in local governments that requires or sets a way or a process for them to raise tax. If that happens, then it would fall into this thing anyway. This would pick it up. As soon as you created that, then they would be, there would be a way to require it, and it's probably one of the strengths of this recommendation. But if at that time that those areas have a, you've assessed the taxing out there and you have a process by which they tax, it fits right into this thing without any difficulty. And then the last chart, the third chart, and I don't know if we want to pull all those charts off of there, particularly unless there's somebody who wants to address a particular chart, really talks about the very small city school districts that have really had a problem because they have not had the ability, don't have the ability to tax, and they have not participated as the REAs have in the past with the $700 local effort kinds of money. And this equalization formula helps them participate at a more equitable rate. And Nanan I use as an example. This thing here probably fits closer than the Nanan example. They're trying to 7 or 8 mills right now taxing, and they could tax at 18 mills and still not raise enough money to meet a local effort to be able to give their kids, you know, the same educational advantages that the districts right beside them have.
Mr. Chairman?
Recommend me.
I'd like to ask a few more broader questions, not specific to the thing, but more philosophical. What is the thinking? Is there agreement on the thinking, or is it a debate in terms of, you know, how much should, I guess the question is whether or not the state should be paying totally for education, or whether it's important to have a local map for some reason, whether if a certain district is very wealthy, should they just have to pay up to a certain amount, or should they contribute more? What's the general thinking on that?
I would have to say there probably isn't agreement. Yes, there is in many political kinds of questions. The general consensus that this committee has worked is there that those that had the ability to do more ought not to be penalized if they were willing to do it. Yet the ones that couldn't do it ought to have some kind of help from the state. That's basically the philosophy that was behind it in doing this. It's very evident that if you just force the 5 mil levy mandated into the district like a Valdez or a North Slope could raise all the money they needed and have no state support. But we're still going on the basis that that education is a state function.
Yeah, that was the thrust of my next question. I don't know if it's for you or the commissioner, but the Constitution doesn't make the state as a provider of education, I guess. But we've always had this local this local map, and I don't know if that's evolved because it seemed to be a good idea to get that kind of local input and keep the constraints on the budget that having to raise local taxes would, or what's the thinking on that? I'm wondering if we just were to go in a more simpler case and say everybody gets this amount with adjustments for area differentials, you'd lose that process of local. You know, it's really, it seems more like a local function, a state function. The state just looks at the formula and kind of rubber stamps it generally, or does whatever they can. I'm wondering what you think of that.
So again, you won't get the total agreement by talking to a number of different people on that issue. The position that we have always taken is that it is, first of all, the state's responsibility. It has been the general feeling, I think, around the state that if it is fully state supported and funded, that the local communities will lose some of their local decision making because the bureaucrats will consequently write some more regulation. I personally don't share that particular view because in a number of the districts, they are totally funded now by the state, and they still retain a great deal of their local decision making, and we do everything we can to ensure that. However, it is our feeling that there should be some form of local contribution. We feel that this is healthy. We think that this brings about a local interest, and it's a good thing as long as the basic amount is substantial to make sure that nobody is denied equal access to an education, and that in this whole process, that the amount of money available total is a reflection of ability to pay, not just on the basis of wealth. So consequently, right now, we've got a number of communities that no matter what they wanted to do, there's no way they could do it because they have no wealth tax. We've got another component in here with the whole 874 question, with the status of that land, federal land, these millions of dollars coming in the form of, really, a local tax contribution. So you can go on and on about should it be fully state supported. There's only one state in the country that is totally state supported, and it's totally state controlled. That's Hawaii. Nationwide, on the average, it amounts to about 50%, 45 to 50% of the contribution to the public schools by the state. So that's the whole array of that particular situation. Only one that's fully state supported. As I mentioned, and that one is also fully state controlled.
Mr.
Scott?
Mr. Meekins, following on that discussion, I think it was in 73, 74, 75, maybe even 76, California toyed with a system, state system of maximums. I think they called it revenue limits at that time, where districts were only allowed to raise a certain amount of money, regardless of their tax base. And this was in response to some of the first original lawsuits that were filed on the case of equalization. The problem there, they had, I think, what happened there in California is that you got more local participation rather than less with the revenue limit, because the local folks realized that that's all the money they had, and there's a lot more interest in how it's going to be spent. The problem I think that California ran into is that they didn't have enough of an inflation factor built in, and they couldn't handle the kinds of schools that they wanted to have in the legislation that was written. But there has been revenue limits imposed in other states in an attempt to make an equalized process. I think what you have in this state, we have an albatross around the Department of Education, and that's the unorganized rural process, which they can't do anything about. Until that's resolved, I think equalization is going to be a major problem in this state.
Mr. Chairman, do you want me to go and hit some of these other recommendations? We spent a lot of time on the equalization chart, but there were some other recommendations in the task force with the rationale behind it, if you want that.
Mr. Cannon, I might take this time to pull the teleconference, see if there's any questions up to this point. Anchor, do you have any questions up there?
Yes, sir, we do.
Bethel?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have one question. When will we be able to testify?
The gentleman here is having to stand in the school classroom now. And we'd like to know when he can come back to testify. It looks like we still got probably another half hour or more of testimony by the Department of Education. I'd say about a half hour. Is that about what you think? Maybe less than half an hour, and then we'll come back to Bethel then for the first on the teleconference testimony, if you can hold up that long.
Okay, it looks like they both agree here, excuse me, that they would like to be last, and they will come back in an hour or so.
All right, we might last that long, I don't know. Noam, do you have any questions?
No questions for Noam.
48.
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Katsubu.
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Ketchikan.
No questions, Mr. Chairman.
Sitka.
No questions at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Saldana.
No, at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Fairbanks.
Nothing here right now, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. McKinnon, if you will continue.
Okay, some other things that, and particularly the large school districts, were being penalized as far as the committee was concerned, the fact that they had to separately count their elementary school districts. And so we recommend that just because you have a lot of elementary school districts or schools in one community doesn't mean that they ought to be, the kids ought to be penalized, so we're saying that they ought to be, all schools, if we're going to separate count elementary, they ought to all separate count elementary. And in line with that, there was a penalty passed on Anchorage, for example, that they were dividing to get their units by the number 21, where the other school districts are dividing by the number 18, which generated, of course, obviously, and would generate a lot more units for the small, or for the areas that didn't have to do that, were Anchorage, because it had a lot of numbers, and Fairbanks and some of the other districts. Wouldn't generate as many units, or and so there was a disequalization that we saw in there, and we recommend that be changed, and that the dividing number be the same for all school districts. And the thing that one of the concepts originally was that it's cheaper to run a big organization than to run a small organization, and it was the committee's belief that you take care of that kind of cost in the front end of your scale, but when you get to, after you get beyond a certain point, the cost of running that school building is about the same. That the demands are for Anchorage to their elementary schools and the things that they have to have, they need to be able to use the same formula so that it be equal. The same line with that, we also looked at the high school formulas and saw the same problem there, plus another one. The high school formula is that, once again, Anchorage is using 21, and there's other districts, a lot of districts are using 18, and in between we've got some that are dividing by 19 to get their ADM. To get rid of that kind of a disequalizing, we recommend they all go to the same number. But we also recommend that the secondary program is extremely costly, and the current foundation doesn't adequately and properly cover the cost of running the high school program. It does not take into account the higher cost of running labs, running activities programs, dealing with junior high, vocational type classes, only they're not vocationally funded at that level. And so we're recommending that because it's more costly, that we use number 17, and therefore school districts will not be using elementary generated, you know, the money generated by elementary students to run their high school program. We're trying to get out of that. I think every administrator in the past, he has done exactly that, because the number of units generated by a high school program will not cover high school operations. So in studying it, we made that recommendation. On the charts, we're trying to take a look at, in particular, the high cost of running vocational programs in the larger districts, and recommend a change there so that they drop from 20 to 18, so it more closely meets the needs of the cost of running the programs, but it's more costly with it running the big power mechanics classes, those kinds of things, like Hutchinson Career Center, those kinds of operations, which are certainly more costly. The one that created a lot of testimony to the committee from a variety of places was the area of special education. Because the special ed programs are no way under the current formula paying for what's being demanded on us by federal and state regulations, and primarily federal demand for the handicapped, in particular the severely handicapped. We recommended a change that would, in effect, allow us a little more money to help with the assessment and all of the various kinds of costs, plus the multiply handicapped. At the present time, the department regulations limits to what they call a level 4 student, and if the student may be a level 4 because he's blind, but at the same time he may have some other handicaps we have to deal with, there is no funding for that. The thing, you can only get up to level 4, and that's as high. They've got many, many in the severely handicapped programs that have more than a level 4 type of a handicap. So we were looking at bilingual education created a problem in the fact that it was difficult for a school district like Anchorage, or Juneau, or Kodiak, or Fairbanks, to use the current form that was designed to deal with specifically one or two foreign languages or different languages that were creating a problem in the school district. Juneau right now services seven languages. Just within the last week or so, we received our eighth language to service, yet we're being funded as if we were dealing with one language. And so consequently, can't get much of a program or do anything. So there was the second chart is the change. And it affects primarily those school districts that deal with more languages. The other thing that the committee did recommend was that there be a process by which you could have what they call a biannual plan of service that would allow districts to work up their plan